Thank you, Emma. My name is Jan Patel, the Heat Island Program Manager, and I just wanted to provide an overview. So EPA's Heat Island Reduction Program offers strategies that help communities mitigate greenhouse gases, but they also help communities adapt to climate impacts, such as heat and, in some cases, heavy precipitation over the long term. So to start, there's data showing that average temperatures both in the U.S. and globally have risen, particularly in the last 30 years. This graph has been developed using data from NOAA and can be found in EPA's 2010 Climate Indicators Report. And this particular graph reflects U.S. data. So through analysis, NOAA found, and this was just released yesterday actually, NOAA found that 2010 was the 34th straight year that was warmer than average 20th century temperatures. So you can see that we have more higher temperatures that we're dealing with in more recent years, and this trend is continued to expect to continue according to the IPCC 2007 report. So even though the magnitude of temperature varies across the U.S., there's both environmental and health reasons to begin reducing or adapting to these higher temperatures, especially in cities where approximately 60% of the U.S. population lives. And so as you can see on this graph here, densely built-up areas tend to have higher temperatures than the average increases that you saw in the last graph. And this phenomenon of higher temperatures in densely built-up areas is called the heat island effect. In these densely built-up areas, the temperature tends to be 9 to 27 degrees higher than surrounding areas. And this is formed because vegetation that has been replaced by urban infrastructure actually holds and absorbs heat in the area, and this is due to the materials used for roadways, for buildings, and this upward trend in temperatures is only intensifying the heat island effect and its impacts. So the graph you see here shows that there's increase in both daytime and nighttime temperatures, and the nighttime heating is actually linked to increase in heat-related illness. So in addition to the health impacts, there are air quality impacts. For example, the warmer microclimate increases ozone formation, and that higher temperature also increases energy use. So during peak periods, you are actually using more energy, which puts more strain on the electric grid, and the increase of energy also can potentially increase air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Another impact is the water quality. And because of these hardscapes in these urban environments, there's more runoff, which increases the amount of water going into the waterways. It increases the temperature of the water that's going into the waterways, and also the amount of pollution that's part of this water. So there are many impacts, and I already mentioned human health, but another tidbit to recognize the impact of heat is over the past 30 years, there have been approximately 6,000 deaths across the U.S. caused by heat-related illnesses, and this does not cover existing health conditions that are exacerbated by heat, such as heart attacks and respiratory illnesses. So these environmental and health impacts from the heat island are much more prevalent during extreme heat events and heavy precipitation. The water quality issues really tie into the heavy precipitation, the increased runoff, but air quality, energy use, and health is all related to is all exacerbated during these extreme heat events. And so to address these trends, we can implement heat island mitigation strategies to adapt to these weather and climate changes. So what I'd like to do is just talk to you about four mitigation strategies that help reduce the heat island effect and therefore also help protect public health in the long term, and also help with some of our other environmental issues. So first is trees and vegetation. When trees are strategically placed around buildings, they are able to increase the energy efficiency of buildings and also help reduce the overall atmospheric temperature within a region by increasing evapotranspiration. Green roofs have a similar effect, but on rooftops. So now these green roofs are replacing hard roofs that hold in heat, and instead the greenery is cooling the area through evapotranspiration, and this also helps with stormwater mitigation. Cool roofs can be placed in. These are highly reflective roofs that increase building energy efficiency and also reduce the overall heat island effect by reflecting away heat into the atmosphere. And then the last mitigation strategy is cool pavements. By using permeable, porous, and reflective pavements, you're able to reduce the heat island effect, but also make a more comfortable walking and driving environment. So, to get more information on these mitigation strategies, to see how they can be used as part of your longer-term adaptation plans, you can visit the EPA Heat Island website, and I'd like to just point out the compendium of strategies. This document actually goes through each mitigation strategy and provides background information and some quantitative analysis as to what can be used in your community. So thank you very much. And I'll pass it back to Emma.
All right, thank you, Neil. So as you can see, the urban heat island mitigation strategies offer a variety of benefits that will be of interest when thinking about adaptation and dealing with long-term effects of increasing temperatures and the potential heat health effects. So certainly do check those out. And here just with some of our contact information from our program, Julia Miller, who focuses on state issues, myself, and also Neil from the Heat Island Reduction Program. Please contact us directly if you have any questions on our resources or other programmatic materials. And also, we do offer a listserv where you can get monthly updates on new policies, resources that have come out, events that may be of interest. So please do follow the link here to sign up if you are interested.